Welcome back to the Blue Line Report. Today I'm going to be joined by Ross Levitin, the host of the Locked On Sens podcast. How's it going, man?
Good, Jack. Great to be back with you.
Yeah, thanks for coming back. So a lot has happened over the Sens summer. We'll get started here. What is just your overall sense of the summer? Is it a net positive, net negative, or like how are we feeling? What's the general vibe?
It's about time. Our big thing on Locked On Senators is there's no more excuses, right? It's year seven of this rebuild, right? I'm feeling a lot older than I did when they made the Eastern Conference Finals, double overtime game seven. And I mean, most of the players are out of the league that were on that team. So when you look at what the Senators did this summer, I think they addressed one of their biggest needs, which was, you know, bringing guys down the lineup into spots that are more comfortable. Obviously, injuries were the reason why Shane Pinto was playing top six for all 77, whatever Josh Norris missed last year. But for them to go out and get Vladimir Tarasenko, I think is obviously the biggest move they made this summer. And it took a while to get there. They went out and waited and waited. Rumor was they offered him a 4-year contract on July 1st. And good thing they were able to hold off and ended up getting him on a 1-year term. And then, of course, they addressed goaltending as well with Jonas Korpisalo coming in. And I think the biggest question mark is, what's he going to be? Is he going to be the guy that was dominant both in Columbus on a bad team and in LA on a good team during the regular season last year? Or is it the guy who was not one of the best goalies in the league for the 2, 3, 4 years before that? So I'm really curious about the goaltending. I'm really excited about the forward group. And on defense, they made their big addition in March, right? Bringing in Jacob Chychrun. You just got to hope he stays healthy. It's been an issue for him over his career, but he's proven and did so in those 12 games with Ottawa last year that when he's in the lineup, like, he's exactly what they need. They've got puck movers in Shabbat and Sanderson. It's just a matter of getting those steady presences that can help them out. So overall, net positive, I'll say, Jack, but not a blow the doors off summer like they did with the Dubravka trade last year. I think they made that big move during this year with Chychrun, but overall, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on Tarasenko. We start at the Tarasenko. I mean, this is obviously in response to them having to trade Dubrincat. It clearly just wasn't going to happen with Dubrincat. He wanted to go to the States, which at the end of the day, that's kind of a handicap a lot of the Canadian teams have on these American players, that they're going to be more inclined to go back to the States. I know we saw that with Calgary last year, losing both Tkachuk and Goudreau. Like, it supposedly doesn't have an impact, but it very clearly does have an impact on Canadian teams. So I think getting Tarasenko is an awesome substitution per se for DeBrincat, especially on the contract they got him on. Like you said, I much prefer the $5 million contract for 1 year that they got than the rumored 4 years on like the first day of free agency. I would not have been as comfortable with the 4 years just because of, he has had an injury past trouble, but for 1 year at $5 million, which I believe is below market value for a top three winger, let's be honest here. He's going to be playing first line minutes with the Sens team. So I think at $5 million, what he could potentially be for the Sens team, I think it's a phenomenal move.
Yeah, I think so as well. And what he brings is a bit of, I don't, for lack of a better term, cockiness. Like he how good he is, and I think that they need a hired gun. And with DeBrincat, like, that qualifying offer was always scary, knowing that that was looming large. He made $9 million in cash last year. Tarasenko, man, I love the way he fits in, especially if he plays with Tim Stützle. Like, the way that Tarasenko's kind of the opposite of DeBrincat, who was a right shot but played the left wing. Tarasenko being a right wing but who shoots left, you've got Stützle and Norris, both your top centers are left shots. I think you're going to set him up for a lot of opportunities to get in scoring positions next year. So I set the over under at 29.5 goals for Tarasenko. And I think I'm going with the over on it, Jack. What do you like?
The over on 29.5. I mean, I could see him doing it for sure. I think they're going to have a real focus on guys like Stützle and Norris. Is there going to be a lot of power? Like, do you think he's PP1 guy?
Yeah, that's a big question, Jack. Like, you look at what they can do. Like, they have so many options, which is a good thing. But like,
awesome, yeah.
That spot you would expect Tarasenko to be on the power play. Like, that's Josh Norris's spot. Like, that's where he scored 30 of his 35 goals. It felt like last year was from that one timer position on the power play. We had Jamie Rivers on Locked On Senators, and one thing he said, like, even though Tarasenko sets up, and he's a St. Louis Blues analyst. So he's seen Tarasenko for all but his time with the New York Rangers. And he said, even though he sets up in that one-timer spot, he doesn't really use it. He's more of like a catch and shoot, almost like a Mike Hoffman style, where he likes to rip the wrister a little bit more. So I'm curious if he could almost be like the down low guy on the second unit and have like a bit more of an opportunity to create from down low. He's known as being like, they call him Tank, right? He's known as being a strong guy. So I think he could be in that, especially if Shane Pinto's unsigned. Like he's usually the net front guy on the second unit. But Dominic Kubalik, who they got in the DeBrincat trade, to me, like if you watch his goals last year, scored 20, 19 of them were one-timers. This guy just loves one-timers. So a power play is a great question, Jack. I probably have Tarasenko in the second unit. And is that going to make him upset? I don't know. But like just off the top of my head, Brady's in front of the net. You can put that in stone. Yeah, he's not going much. Anywhere. Then Stutzel's on the half wall on his strong side, on the left side. You got Batherson or Giroux in the middle of the ice in that bumper position. Norris on the other side. And up top, Shabbat, Sanderson, take your pick. Even Chychrun, a long shot. But like, I don't know. Who are you taking out there to put Tarasenko on that unit?
Yeah, no, like, I think you're probably right that Tarasenko's on the second power play unit. Like, but it's a good, like you said, it's a great thing. This is an awesome problem to have of like, who's going to play first power play unit, like Tarasenko or Josh Norris. Like, that's an awesome problem to have. And like you said, the defense, it could be a Shabbat, Sanderson. I wouldn't honestly count out Chychrun of being that first power play unit. We know all three guys can do it, so it's going to be interesting to see who like gets these minutes. I just wonder if almost people focus more on like Stutzel and the scoring goes through more Stutzel, because I think this could be really his year to take over the offensive load of this team and really be the guy who can consistently put up like 90 points for the team. And then with Brady Tkachuk, he's always there. He's going to put up 80 or whatever he does. And like, I could see Tarasenko having a great year. I just think the offense is going to run more through their guys of Stutzel, Tkachuk, and I think Norris being back, he'll be a big focal point of this offense. But I honestly, again, I can see Tarasenko easily going over that 29.5 goals. So 30, I think it's an awesome move.
33 is what I'm saying for Tarasenko. And don't discount the fact that he needs a contract after this year, right?
That's true. That's a good point.
Fired his agent during the process this year. It did not go the way he thought it would in free agency. And he probably draws that back to being a bit of a down year for his standards. Only 18 goals last year. And he's only a year away from, what was it, 78 points, 74 points he had the year before. Like, he's a guy who's been a consistent point producer, Stanley Cup champion, tied for the team lead. And it's not like we're talking 10 years ago here. This is the 2019 Stanley Cup. So when you're looking at what Tarasenko brings, I'm hoping it's that hired gun mentality where he's just here to score goals. And if it's for 1 year, it's for 1 year. Honestly, I don't think Sens fans really worry about the beyond for him like they did with DeBrincat, because he didn't give up assets to get him. You just pay him his contract and away he goes. Everybody else just slots in a little bit nicer in the depth chart with him in the mix.
Yeah. So like you said, I think Tarasenko has been a great addition for this Sens team. And as almost shitty the DeBrincat situation turned out being, with his qualifying offer being $9 million, I think you came out of this on top. You had to get rid of DeBrincat, which is never fun, but you came out with Vladimir Tarasenko at $4 million cheaper than DeBrincat would have been making. So at the end of the day, I think it's a good net positive move, we'll say. But the other thing I do want to talk about on forward before we talk about goaltending, because I think we'll have a lot to say about that, is Shane Pinto, who still doesn't have a contract. And it's not like in years past where Ottawa has this surplus of money that they can give out. They're only $800,000 away from the cap, if I'm not mistaken. What do you think?
So yeah, even less, man. It almost feels like that Tarasenko move was maybe a bit premature, right? We're talking about how great it was, but now it's left them with not much to go around. So you got to think there's a move coming. And whether that's Mathieu Joseph, which has been long rumored, which I think it would be unfortunate, because there's no way Mathieu Joseph is as bad this year as he was last year. He only scored three goals, and none of them were at even strength. Yeah, actually, funny enough, he scored one goal on the power play. He scored one goal shorthanded, and he scored one goal on a 3-on-5 shorthanded. So he didn't have multiple goals in any single situation last year, and he signed for 3 more years at 2.95. So if you can move him, you can probably replace that with Pinto. I don't know what their plan is right now. They also have to sign Igor Sokolov, who's a good friend of the show. And it seems like they're pennies apart on an AHL salary. I have no idea why there's no deal done there yet. But again, new ownership officially takes over in about a week, week and a half. And I'm hoping that they can figure this out pretty quickly, because Shane Pinto is such an important part of this team. And he had such a big stride last year playing in all 82 games after missing all of the season beforehand with the shoulder injury, and then coming back and leaving again, having to get the proper surgery done. It would just be such a shame. But if I'm the Senators, the reason why I think they can put a bit of pressure on Shane Pinto's camp is Ridly Greig could be a guy who takes advantage of that spot if he's given a third line center role in training camp. That's not what anybody wants, but it does. It has always felt like those two are side by side, early second, late first, 1 year apart draft picks. I think Ridly Greig could get that opportunity, but they need to get Shane Pinto signed, man. He's one of my favorite players on the team.
Yeah, like clearly something has to budge here, because there's not enough money. As much as Sens fans would love it, there's not enough money for Pinto currently under the cap. So, like you said, Joseph could be the moving part. I was wondering if almost Kubelik could be the guy out, just because he hasn't come in. You know what Joseph is, and like you said, he can't be worse than last year. I mean, that's not a great selling factor, but I think we know the ceiling that could be for Matthew Joseph, and I think it's a lot higher than what he showed last year. Almost wonder if you bring in Kubelik, or you move out, sorry, Kubelik, and say it's a net neutral. You never saw Kubelik. He was never part of the team. I could almost see that happening, but I think a lot of Sens fans are excited about Kubelik. Obviously, you said his one-timer ability is
hilarious.
Top of the league, obviously, and he can bring a lot of value to this third line, fourth line role for the Ottawa Senators here. Something's clearly got to budge. So I think it's either Joseph or maybe even Kubelik. But yeah, I think the thing that Ottawa is now realizing is going to bite them in the butt is that dead cap, because it's almost sitting at $5 million, I believe.
Yeah, thanks. The guy whose jersey's hanging behind you.
Yeah, hanging with my Matt Murray jersey right now. Don't worry, Toronto's paying him $0. So
don't get started on how little sense that makes. Why does one team, like, shouldn't Ottawa get cap relief on?
Yeah, probably.
Salary? Like, why does Ottawa have to have cap money against a guy when he doesn't have cap against a team he actually plays for? Makes no
sense. It's dumb. I completely agree.
$1.5 million, that's probably what you could get Pinto on a one-year deal for.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, Matt Murray is literally the reason. And then you got Bobby Ryan, White, and someone else. Michael Delzotto.
One of the worst signings. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I said, wow, they really gave Michael Delzotto a $4 million contract, and they're like, no, it's 2 years and $2 million per. I was like, they gave him a multi-year deal? This guy was out of the league a year before, and sure enough, they bought him out after 1 year. Yeah. Made absolutely no sense. Pierre Maguire, by the way, was all over that, made that decision.
Of course he did. Dead cap, I think, is really showing up and biting Ottawa in the butt right now, which it's not the position you want to be in. Now you get some cap compensation next year, I think, a little bit with Colin White's contract.
Yeah, but I think the biggest problem is, Jack, and this is my main criticism of Pierre Dorion, it's how many assets he's had to spend mopping up his own mistakes. And it's so unfortunate. Like, Matt Murray's a perfect example. Not only that dead cap money, but also a third-round pick. They gave up a second round pick to move Nikita Zaitsev. Like, they have to give up people to move out contracts that he signed. Like the things that he did. And it just feels short-sighted at times. There's a lot that I like that Pierre Dorion's done. And frankly, I think he should remain the GM. I think they should bring in a president of hockey operations, though. I think he kind of needs a boss in a sense. But at the same time, I like a lot that he's done. But that has rubbed me and a lot of fans the wrong way, where it's like, just like signing Tarasenko, it's like, why aren't you taking care of Pinto first and then going? It just feels like everything is impulse, and maybe there's not a long-term strategy as much as there should be.
Yeah, I completely agree. A president of hockey operations would be the best thing for this Ottawa Senators team, because like you said, it does kind of feel like he's on the boat patching holes while he's on the boat. Like, the Brinkat can't – oh, no, Tarasenko. Just like, it feels a lot of impulse, and – like you said, that's why Pinto's not signed up right now, is because we have Tarasenko at $5 million. And again, good deal, but I feel like you almost have to prioritize in-house cleaning before going out to the market and getting guys like a Tarasenko.
Got to put on your own oxygen mask before helping the person next to you.
Exactly. So, I mean, that is a massive criticism of Pierre Dorion, but it could bite Ottawa in the butt here, but hopefully not.
Just 1 year, and then basically all that money is going to Jake Sanderson after this year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's up this year, right?
Yeah, he is so good. He's very good. It's those things where they don't always show up on the stat sheet. Like, if you look at the end of the game, you're like, wow, he played a lot, but, like, no goals, one assist, maybe. But you're like, he was so good every time he touches the puck. He's a guy that I always tell if friends of other teams or fans of other teams, friends of mine, are watching their team play Ottawa, I always say watch 85. Like, he's a magician out there. Really fun to watch.
Yeah, coming out of college, being one of, like, he looked very solid defensively. I mean, we all knew he was offensively, what he was going to be able to do. But I think the biggest worry for a lot of people was coming out of college, how's he going to be able to adapt to the NHL style of hockey? And will he be able to play a structured defensive game? And I think we saw that, yeah, he was. He was really good at it, too.
Totally.
So, I mean, having 85 next year, I want to ask you, because as a Leafs fan, the biggest flack that I've been getting forever is, like, having to pay all your big stars a lot of money. How does it feel on the other end of the shoe now? You got to pay all your big guys.
Well, I mean, nobody's making over $10 million.
No one making over $10 million, but it's even
close. And I'm not saying that Tim Stutzel's up in the Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews territory of talent yet. Although, I mean, 9 points behind Matthews last year, but down year for 34 in the white and blue. No, there's no question about the value that Matthews brings. Just in a cap world, man, it's about setting the precedent, and they set the precedent that they were going to pay big money, and they did that with John Tavares. That was kind of a vanity purchase that I don't think they really needed at the time. Like, was it that much of a difference between having Nazem Kadri there versus John Tavares? I know they spent 1 year together, but ultimately they had to move on from Kadri when his deal came.
Yeah, I also don't think Kadri became in Colorado and now in Calgary, I don't think under Toronto Maple Leafs team would have been the same. Like,
right.
I much prefer, as much as it's a lot of money, I much prefer a second line of Tavares, left winger, whatever, could be Bertuzzi, could be Nyes, whatever, and then a Marner or Nylander than a Kadri, Marner, Nylander, because I think, Tavares is the captain. He's the captain for a reason. I think he brings that veteran presence. Kadri at the time was the guy every year in the playoffs getting suspended. John Tavares was the guy to break the first round streak for the New York Islanders. So I think, looking back in hindsight, you wish you didn't pay Tavares as much money. But also, John Tavares in that free agency period turned down $13 million from the San Jose Sharks. Yeah. So taking $2 million less, if a superstar really is clearly showing that interest, and for a Toronto team
Hold on. Is he a superstar?
I think when they signed the contract, he was a superstar.
He's a star. And not
perennial all-star.
Come on.
Perennial all-star, top 15 player in the NHL.
Never had 90 points.
When they signed the contract.
Never had 90 points his whole career.
Because he's predominantly a defensive centerman, but, you know. But, like, for a Toronto team.
He had 84 points, 82 games. The year before, he had 66 and 77. He's a good player. I don't know. I've never been a John Tavares guy. Maybe
that's fair. That's fair. He plays
Let me ask you this. You're starting a team. You got to win a Stanley Cup this year. Who are you taking, John Tavares or Claude Giroux? I've had this debate with a lot of people. I respect both answers. I think they both bring a lot, but I think you look at that and the fact that it's a good debate, and then one's 6.5.
That's a good point.
When they signed Tavares to that, they should, again, take care of in-house first. If they sign Matthews to whatever, Marner to whatever, then go out. But once he made 11, then Matthews is like, well, if he's making 11, I'm better than him, so I need 11.6. Yeah. And then that threw off everything else, because then Marner's like, well, I'm not that much worse. I should get 11 as well. And his dad got involved and all that. So I just think that they set the precedent too high with bringing Tavares. Maybe the timing is it. But you're saying that whenever they come available, you fit them in.
I think so. And just because Toronto before that, the last like Okay, I won't use the term superstar. Last perennial all-star they had was, I mean, Phil Kessel, you can count. But the last perennial all-star before Phil Kessel would have been Matt Sundin, which, like, I was never alive when Matt Sundin was a Toronto Maple Leaf. So it's been a little bit since they had a perennial all-star like Matt Sundin. So I think John Tavares, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of, looking back on it now, it's a lot of money. But I think it was also, it was much more of a just a purely hockey move. He was brought in as the captain. He was brought in to show Toronto was willing to buy. This was Lamoriello's big move to show that he was all in on this team. So I think, yeah, was it a little too much money? Yeah, did it set the precedent high? But I think it was more than just a purely hockey move, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
But yeah, no, looking back, like, it is a lot of money. And like right now, it doesn't look amazing. But, you know,
they're not the team. Like, I think, and I don't know if you want to get into it, but I do think Ottawa will make the playoffs this year. However, sure. I do not think Toronto's even close to being in the discussion of being being on the way out. I'm keeping my eye on Florida and to a lesser extent the Boston Bruins, which they just won't die. So I'm not getting my hopes up for Boston. They just somehow, some way, watch Charlie Coyle score 90 points this year.
Oh, of course.
They'll be able to just, you know, regroup after losing their two top centermen and have for so long. But I mean, you also look at it and it's like, with Boston, like, they're the team that I look at and it's like, oh, are they ripe for the picking? And then it's like, okay, well, they have the reigning coach of the year. They have a 60 goal scorer and one of the best defensemen in the league in Charlie McAvoy. Like, that's a pretty good nucleus to have no matter what.
And the Vezina Trophy winner.
Yeah, there you go. That's going on down the middle. So yeah. I do worry about that, but I think if Ottawa can get in, it'd probably be, I mean, the Panthers are still like, it's one of those. I think the Panthers are going to have a bit of a, Stanley Cup hangover. I know they didn't win it, but the battle that it took for them to get there, I don't know how long they're going to be out, but I know Montour is expected to miss a little bit at the start of the year. And Matthew Tkachuk's probably, I think he'll play, but is he 100%? That's a big surgery to get with not a whole lot of time in between. Yeah. So I'm curious, let's say, to see. And Sergei Bobrovsky, which one's going to show up? They don't have Mr. Spectacular there, Alex Lyon, to come mop things up anymore. So I'm extreme, and I mean, Spencer Knight's back. We'll see. Obviously, we hope he's doing well after his time with the NHLPA's program. But man, the Atlantic Division is no easy task for anybody. It's gonna be really fun to watch.
Oh, definitely. Like, and yeah, I definitely want to get into like playoffs this year. So I mean, I think, and this is me coming at it with the Toronto bias. I think Toronto and Tampa are the two locks for the playoffs in that Atlantic Division. I feel like I'm fair in saying that.
I think Tampa's a team that sometimes I can convince myself are going to take a step back. And then I remember that they have Andre Vasilevsky and he plays 65, 70 games a year. And then I remember that, no, they will be in the playoffs.
And like, this is their first year of rest in like 4 years. This is their first full offseason they've had pretty much. So
don't discount the loss of Alex Killorn though. I feel like he was one of the glue guys in there. I know they lost Palat, and it felt like that a little bit with Palat when he left, but Killorn, man, that guy was a heart and soul player for that team. Like, they're going to need Hagel and Nick Paul to be core guys now. They're both signed long-term. Like, before they could get away as being like good third liners or complementary players on the top six. But now, like, these guys are going to have to take the next step. And I mean, I'm confident that they will be, but they need Stamkos to be decent at best. I know it's a contract year for him and be shocked if he plays anywhere else ever. But yeah, like, I mean, they still have 50 goal scoring point. Like, they're still great.
Yeah, they'll be good. But like, I was a little confused about the Hagel move. They really doubled down on him because all those assets they spent on him, I think a first, a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth.
Oh, you're thinking of that's what they spent to get Tanner Jeannot. That's what they doubled.
Oh, that was the Jeannot. Yes, that's right. That's right. No, Hagel, they spent the two
first rounds.
Yeah. So really doubling down on him. Like, Hagel, I mean, I watched in the playoffs. I saw Jeannot. I saw Hagel. They could have just had a bad 6-game series, and that happens. But they weren't game changers at all. Like, they definitely weren't. You weren't worrying about I wasn't worried about Toronto losing the third and fourth line battles. I was worried about the big guys, which I guess is a good thing for Tampa. You want your big guys to be clicking, but I was not worried at all about a Hagel or Janot coming in and being massive assets for the Lightning. So,
because it would never would have happened where a guy like Nick Paul would score two goals in a game six. That,
yeah, I was always worried about Nick Paul because, you know, he's also a Sen, so it had to happen, you know. Yeah.
That made me a happy man that day. Lying if I told you otherwise.
Yeah, no, don't worry. I'm in Ottawa, so I heard it from a few of my friends here.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
They got over the hump here, though, man.
They got over the hump. So, I mean, I think Tampa's in and Toronto, I think they're in. I mean, you can criticize us about the playoffs, but there's not many better teams in the regular season than the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, with new additions, Bertuzzi and Domi and Reeves trying to get tougher. So, we'll see how it goes.
Are you in on Reeves? What's your thoughts on Ryan?
I'm so in on Reeves just because he's fun. Like, hockey-wise, you know, he'll be fine, but he's so fun. And getting Domi, like, I'm not going to lie, we probably got a little bit worse on paper this regular season, but we got so much more fun. And honestly, if we're going to go lose again in the playoffs, I want it to be a fun team.
Yeah.
Like, if I had to pick out my two favorite players who weren't Leafs before this season, it would have been Ryan Reeves and probably Max Domi. Like, one of the most beloved players in Leafs history. You get his son, and you get the toughest guy in the NHL. Like, it's a fun offseason, you know? You get Klingberg, who is defensively, but he's fun offensively. So
fun is one way to put it.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think we got a little bit worse, but we're just going to try different stuff. I am all for the not blowing it up. I don't think we should have traded Nylander. I don't think we should have traded Marner. You can't trade Matthews or Tavares. So, I mean, as much as it sounds like we just want to run it back, I think that's the only option you have right now. So we got fun, I think, the Leafs is a good way to put it.
What's your confidence level in the goaltending?
I'm actually feeling more confident than I think a lot of people are when it comes to goaltending because of Samsonov. I think if he's at his peak, if he's fully healthy, he can be a solid goalie. And then Wall last year, I was really surprised with Wall. He came into that second round series, never playing a playoff game before, only having a handful of games in the NHL, like regular season. And he came in, he was pretty cool, calm, and collected. Like, he wasn't an all-star, or he wasn't a superstar goalie or anything, but he was solid. He did what he needed to do. And I think the last two cup winners have had goalies like Aiden Hill and Georgiev. It showed that you don't necessarily need a super, superstar goalie like a Vasilevsky or something in years past. You just need a goalie who can do their job. And goaltending is obviously not our strongest suit, but I think if Samsonov can do his job, and if not, Wall can back him up and be just a solid in net, then I'm fairly confident with this offense that they'll be able to score 4 or 5 a night, at least in the regular season, to bail out the goalies if they have some off nights or something.
No, I don't disagree with that, man. I think it's going to be an interesting year in Toronto based on the future, because all these guys are signed to 1 or 2 year deals left, but
yeah.
Man, there's a ton of talent to be excited for in the heart of enemy territory, as I like to call it on our show.
Exactly. So Toronto, Tampa, fairly locks. I think Boston and Florida are the two teams that Ottawa's got to be eyeing right now.
Yep.
Boston obviously losing the two big guys, Krejci and Bergeron, and a guy like Bertuzzi. Where did Bertuzzi go again? I forget.
I forget.
Yeah, it's weird. Anyway, Bertuzzi's gone, so that's weird. But Boston, I think, is the team that Ottawa should be looking towards, like, taking out. And I know that's weird to say it after a team put up 135 points the year prior. It feels weird to count them out, and I don't want to count them out because they're the Boston Bruins, because anytime you do, they'll come back and they'll be good. But I think the Bruins, more than Florida, I think, are the team to beat for Ottawa.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think Florida in particular. And then with Boston, yeah, like you won't catch me taking Boston lightly. Mm-hmm. I've seen this movie before, and it doesn't end well for people who discount them.
Yeah, like it's gonna be a tough division race, because I think as much as Ottawa would like to take the step forward into the top three division, I think wild card is where it's gonna be for the Sens this year.
Well, don't forget Buffalo's looking like they're ready to take another step too.
But Wildcard's gonna be tough.
I love Devin Levi, I really do, but I think Buffalo might be asking a lot of a 21-year-old to be like the only guy.
Yeah,
that I don't believe in Ukko-Pekka-Luukkonen. Maybe that's a me problem, not a Buffalo problem. But I would be looking. I think that they really messed up not getting Connor Hellebuyck early this summer. Like that, they have so many assets.
Yeah,
it wouldn't even cost like that. Like fans of the team wouldn't have even noticed.
Exactly.
It was a Matthew Savoy or a Zach Benson. Like these are great prospects that would really help Winnipeg. Sure. But like they need a goalie. Same with New Jersey to a lesser extent, because I actually think that Vanecek could be a decent goalie. But man, just feels like Buffalo and Connor Hellebuyck were just meant to be. But alas, maybe that's not the case.
Yeah, maybe that's a good thing for Ottawa trying to get their playoff pursuits here. But like I think you got Florida and New York were the last two wildcard teams. Those are two good teams. I think the Islanders are always just solid, I feel. They still have
Ilya Sorokin as long exactly. as they have it, they got a chance.
They're a horse. And then I think Pittsburgh is gonna have to come at it with everything they got this year, obviously getting Dubas and realizing that Crosby and Malkin only got so many years left, so they're gonna be a big threat. Detroit, I wouldn't count out.
Oh no. Look at Detroit's decor. I've been actually getting a lot of heat as being a Detroit Red Wings hater, which I guess I'll take with pride, but I'm not high on Detroit this
year. You're not feeling the Red Wings team, eh?
No, like I'm not out on the Iser plan. Like so I see some people throwing shade at like the plan in general, but like right before COVID, like that's one of the worst teams ever. And it takes some time to build. So I would just say for Red Wings fans, especially on the back end, they have a ton of guys coming. But look how many guys are on one-way contracts this year. And like, yeah, injuries will happen. Kids will get opportunity. But I think it's starting next year where their window will open at all. I think that, yeah, like their top four, they've got either Shane Gostisbehere, Ben Sherratt, or Justin Hall in their top four. So I don't want
Justin Hall in your top four. I know for experience, you don't want that to happen.
Really don't.
Definitely don't want that. So, yeah, I could see Detroit being a team from on the outside looking in. I don't think they'll be as horrible as you might think, but I could see them being a team on the outside looking in. And I think a team that a lot of people are looking over for some reason is the Washington Capitals. I know they're not super, super stacked when it comes to depth, but they still got Ovechkin. They still got their guys. They got Kuznetsov. They got Backstrom. They got Oshie. They got their guys still. The core is still there. And I think when you have that core, a core that's won it before, I know it was a few years ago, obviously. But again, like Pittsburgh, they're realizing that Ovechkin's only got so many years left. Backstrom's only got so many years left. I think they could be a team that's maybe not a wild card team, but a team that you play in the regular season that if you take lightly, they will beat you.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, Jack. I think that there's a real opportunity for them, but I don't think it's a make or break year for them either.
That's fair. Yeah. I just think they could be a real team that in Ottawa's pursuit of the wild card could be a team that just always hangs around, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, the talent is just there from, you know, years of experience. I just worry that foot speed's going to be an issue for them. Like to me, the key is like, what's Nicholas Backstrom going to look like after so little hockey over the last number of years? And my other question there is like, does Kuznetsov even want to be there? And is he going to make it abundantly clear to everybody that he doesn't want to be there? Because, you know, you'd heard rumors that there was going to be a trade this summer, that he had made a trade request. And I'm just curious what the dynamic's going to be with that team. So I could be completely wrong. So, but I also think that I think Washington to me is not a team. I'm worried about Buffalo. I'm worried about the Islanders, and I'm worried about the Florida Panthers. Really, for that wild card spot with Ottawa.
All right. Yeah, that's fair. They're all good teams. Like, I just want to know for Ottawa fans, if worst comes to worst, and like playoffs are missed again, what can you expect to happen? Or is it just we can't even plan for that? We're making the playoffs.
Gotta make playoffs. We're like I said, our thing is no excuses. I think that if you get off to a tough start, like people are already getting fired. Like I think that's how important playoffs is this year, is that you can't wait until the end of the season. If changes need to be made, changes need to be made like November. Like our big thing is if the Sens aren't over 500 by the time they go to Sweden, I know Toronto's going to Sweden as well this year.
Yeah.
It's after 16 games. If the Senators don't win 10 out of their first 16 games, DJ Smith should not be going to Sweden with them.
Really? That's short of a leash, eh?
Yeah. Because it's just a precedent been set year after year, man. Like, this would be their third straight year where the second month of the season, they're already done. Like, they just can't, you can't keep doing that to a fan base. And a new owner is coming in, and he's probably like, man, I just spent almost $1 billion on this team. Like, and clearly things like haven't been going that great. So why would anyone be like, hey, let's just run it back? Like, you know, changes would have to be coming and coming in a major, major way.
Yeah. Like, I can't see a world where DJ Smith is the coach if they are losing. Like, I completely agree.
Yeah. And it has to be like a short leash.
Yeah. I thought he was going to be done before this year started. Like, I thought this was the summer for him to pack his bags and try to find a new job as an assistant coach somewhere.
Right.
But I almost feel like how I felt about Babcock going into his last year with Toronto. It's like, yeah, he can do it, maybe, but why was he not fired? Like, he's proven that. I think DJ Smith is an excellent developmental coach, but this team is very not in the developmental stage anymore. I think they're obviously, like you said, they're obviously in a win now mode. So I think just running it back with DJ Smith, I much rather would have a coach just to go from the start of the year to the end of the year. But I think if DJ Smith can do it, props to him, obviously. I just don't see a world where DJ Smith is the coach at the end of the year, just because they want to be a winning team. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to be a playoff team with the, like, if DJ Smith is fired 16 games in, I think that's a perfect leash. You can come back. Even if you go below 516 games, that doesn't rule you out immediately. But I just don't see a world where Ottawa is ending the year with DJ Smith.
Yeah. I mean, if they're ending the year in the playoffs, then sure. But
yes, exactly. But
the players love him. But at some point, like, it's a results oriented business, and he's like the fourth longest serving head coach in the league. And everyone who's longer serving has Stanley Cups on their resume. So this is the year.
No, this is a crucial year for Ottawa. And like, lastly, we'll touch on Korpisalo because I'm interested to hear what you think about this. So Korpisalo, a lot of money, a decent chunk of term. What are we thinking?
I think more term than money. I think $4 million for a guy who you expect to be a starter. Like, I don't think that's too crazy in and of itself. I think that where you're really, like, I don't know if nervous, but like, you've never played more than 40 games in a year. So you're going to have to rely on Anton Forsberg to be healthy, and to be able to push him to play. Like, I think a perfect mix is Korpisalo plays 50 games, Forsberg plays the rest. What's that? 32.
Yeah.
32. So I think that's the perfect situation for this goaltending. It has to be a tandem. Like, I think that you brought in Korpisalo because, well, frankly, Cam Talbot was brutal. He couldn't stay healthy. And when he was inconsistent at best. He had some great games. Don't get me wrong, but he had some games where he was the reason why the team lost. So I think with Korpisalo, just like, be good. Like, you don't have to be excellent, be good, be consistent and be good. And what gives me the confidence of that, like, if he had just played in LA last year, I would be a little more nervous, man. I'd be like, oh, like, did he just play behind a good team? But he was that good in Columbus last year, and they are awful. They didn't even have Zach Werenski. Like, their only good defenseman wasn't even in the lineup. So I think there's a good feeling around Senators fans, but, like, again, this is where it goes down to, like, this is their no excuses. Pierre Dorion took a swing on Matt Murray, whiffed, took a swing on Cam Talbot, traded a guy who just got ranked the 9th best goalie in the NHL in Philip Gustafson, who I can't have revisionist history on that. I was of the mind that they should have exposed Gustafson in the expansion draft. I had no time for Philip Gustafson. I was also a Joey Decord guy. He just earned a one-way contract.
I was a Joey Decord guy too. So I completely.
And he's got the swagger. He's got everything you want in a starting goalie. Gustafson, I worked in Belleville for 2 years. The amount of times it was 2-0 for the other team in the first 5 minutes was unreal. But he figured it out. He was unbelievable last year in Minnesota, Gustafson was. So I can't sit here and say I knew that was coming because I would have gotten rid of Gustafson for nothing. So sure. Whatever. They bring in Talbot, X on me. I can't get fired from my thoughts on the team. I should say I can get fired, but not from my thoughts on the team. But no, in all seriousness, I think that he gives them the good chance, right? Goalies are voodoo to an extent. There's probably five guys in the league where you know what you're going to get every single year.
Yeah.
But you just have to hope. And what sucks too is the way they kind of unceremoniously left Craig Anderson after the after COVID. It's like, if you're going to have shitty goaltending anyways, like, why didn't you just keep Anderson and just like let him ride off into the sunset if you didn't think you're going to win anyways? But I think the problem is they thought they were ready to win and they weren't. So yeah. I'm hopeful. Let's put it that way. The highlight reels of Korpisalo, like, he's a very enthusiastic goalie in terms of his crease movement. You'd almost like to see him kind of, you know, ease a little bit more, make a little more compact movements, but he's all over the net. He's kicking out saves. He's making great glove saves. And I'm curious. I think I'm cautiously optimistic would be how I feel about the goaltending in Ottawa.
That's fair. I think Korpisalo, if he can be good and if he can do his job, like we said earlier, you don't need a all-star goalie like you did before in years past to win the Stanley Cup. Last year, Aiden Hill, he was a waiver pickup. Like the guy before, Georgiev, like he was a backup goalie in New York for a long time. Like, if Korpisalo can be good, who cares about his past? Who cares about how much money you're paying him? If he can bring you to the playoffs, which I think he has the possibility to do and like the capabilities to do, then it's a good move. And you forget about money, you forget about term. I just think it is a big risk for Ottawa. The five years is scaring me, because I think you're right. $4 million, it's what you're going to be paying a starting goalie in the NHL.
Yeah. If anything, it's a low one.
Yeah, it's a lower end. It's a lower end to average like starting goalie cost. And if he can be good, which we know he can be good, then it'll be a great contract money wise. But the 5 years scares me. And the 5 years scares me because you have a guy named Mads Søgaard in the system right now.
I love Mads. I actually think that Ottawa has a trio of good young goalies. We saw what Kevin Mandelazzi did in his first NHL start. 46 saves. I think it's the third most ever in a first NHL game. We had him on the show this summer. We had his dad on the show right after it happened. And we just talked to Mads also last week. And Søgaard is such a nice kid. Like, he's such a well-meaning individual. Sometimes I told this to him too. I was like, you got to stop being so hard on yourself. Like, if you listen to him after a game when it doesn't go his way, all he does is blame himself. He sucks. He's this, he's that. Like, just breathe. He's got to just let it go because he's so talented. He's so big. And we saw in that game against Toronto, right, that went to that long shootout. Like, he was kicking him out all night. He was battling. And I think that he's getting, obviously, Levi Marilainen's the third guy of that trio. He led the Finnish Elite League in shutouts this year with 8 and then came over and went 3-0 in Belleville with a 9.33. Got his feet wet at the NHL level. They got pumped in one of the games. Not his fault, but that game against Florida where all hell broke loose and there was like 200 penalty minutes. Right. It was like an 8-2. But yeah, Marilainen was like, okay, this is the NHL. Like, I can imagine that's your first experience playing in the NHL. Okay, here we go.
But like, I think, like you said, I think Sogard's a really good goalie. I think he'll be a really good goalie in the NHL. And that's why I was a little shocked that Ottawa was going to make that 5-year commitment, because honestly, I thought before they signed Korpisalo, and I completely agree with having him in Belleville this year, have him be the everyday starter in Belleville. Completely agree with that decision. I think it's a lot better for his progress in being a goaltender than being the backup in Ottawa. Like, I think that's a great idea. But honestly, before they brought Korpisalo, I thought he could have been battling for the starting job if it was between him and Forsberg, because I think he could easily take that over Forsberg. He has a good camp. He has a good like start to the season or whatever. He could have been the starting goalie. And it's almost like, if he's not this year, then I think it could have been next year. But with five years locked in with Korpisalo and then another year locked in with Forsberg, when can this guy break through? Because I think he could break through right now. If you want to wait one more year, that's fine. But when is he going to find the light to shimmy through and get into the NHL lineup?
I'm really curious to see, but it's almost like you'd rather have these kids over marinate in the minors. And to be frank, like, Mads had some struggles at the AHL level too. Not major ones, but where you're like, okay, like I think he needs to go and dominate that level first. And then once he's able to do that, then we could get to a place where it's like, okay, now it makes sense to be able to find you an everyday spot. Because injuries happen too, right? Jack, Ottawa used 7 goalies last year.
That's true, yeah.
It's wild. So I think he'll get his opportunity. But I did kind of do a bit of a double take when I saw the 5-year term for Korpisalo. Now, I think Anton Forsberg's one of the X factors on this team. I think that there's a good chance that he's put into a position where he has to be. And if that's the case, whether it's through injury or whatever the case may be, like they have to believe in him. And this now is going into his final year of his contract, and he's coming off a double MCL tear. Like, this is a big year for both goalies for Ottawa, and Korpisalo to get the fans on his side because he's signed for such a long term, and for Forsberg to get his next contract. Otherwise, Mads can slowly work his way up and maybe be the backup, whether it's next year or if he's still not ready, then you can extend Forsberg for 1 year or 2 years, whatever the case may be. But yeah, I don't think it's far-fetched to think in the next couple of years, the tandem will be Korpisalo and Mads Søgaard.
Yeah. The only thing that scares me about having Forsberg and Korpisalo locked in for multiple years is that it gives Ottawa the freedom to trade Søgaard.
Yep.
If that were to ever happen. And I think Sogard's really good, and I would hate to see Ottawa trade him because Ottawa has had a history in the past of trading a goal, like we just said, Forsberg. They just ranked him as the 9th best goalie in the NHL now.
Oh, Gustafsson.
Or sorry, not Forsberg, Gustafsson. Yeah, yeah. 9th best goalie in the NHL. Like, it just scares me that the possibility, if they don't trade him, then I think this works. It's fine. It just scares me because Ottawa has the freedom of the possibility. And we know Dorian goes off the, patching holes while he's on the boat.
Yeah, not afraid to make trades, that guy.
Exactly. So it scares me if Søgaard is traded. I think he can be a really good NHL goalie, and it's going to suck to see him in another uniform if that does happen.
Kind of like Ben Bishop back in the day.
Exactly. And like a Ray Emery, and like good goalies have come out of Ottawa before.
Robin Leonard.
Yeah, yeah. There's Ottawa's had a history of like trading goalies before they showed up in Ottawa and being like studs. So it just scares me to hopefully. So if they hold on to Søgaard, then I think this can work out. I just really don't want Ottawa to turn around and see, like you said, we have the trio of rookie goalies. We got 2 goalies. We can get a lot for Søgaard. Yep. I just don't want to see him do well in another uniform if I'm an Ottawa Senators fan.
I completely agree with you on that one. No doubt.
Yeah. But so net positive offseason, I think we can say, right?
Net positive, but still until they prove it, I think Sens fans learned their lesson for maybe being a little too excited last year and saying like, hey, it's time. Like we're cup champs, but you know what I mean? Like if they stay healthy, I like their mix up the middle with Pinto. If he gets signed right as the third line center versus being in the top 6. And I think they've got a nice mix. So if Kubalik's on the third line again, somebody's got to go though, right? It can't be Kubalik and Joseph. I think it's between those guys, or something we haven't even discussed yet is Eric Brännström. He took a huge stride last year, but he's a lightning rod for criticism in Ottawa, where it's like, okay, he's an offensive defenseman who had less points than Travis Hamonic. It's like, how offensive are you? Or is Tyler Cleven just going to come in and say, that's my spot?
Yeah. Yeah.
The team loves Tyler Cleven. And I do too. I think he brings an element of physicality and old school hockey that the Sens have always coveted. They've always had a big, tough guy on their blue line, whether it's Borowiecki, Matthot, Greiba. Like, they always want to have a bit of meat and potatoes there. And, like, Clevin's 6'5". We interviewed him at Dev Camp. He's, like, 6'5", 220. Like, he's a farm boy from North Dakota. Like, he's going to come in. We call him the K-Train because Anton Volchenkov back in the day was the A-Train. So, we like to kind of play on that a little bit. But if he comes in on an entry-level contract and says, that's my job and I'm not leaving, then his Brännström's $2 million all of a sudden what you look to move.
There's a lot of
they got to make a move before the end of training camp when waivers comes into effect and you got to be cap compliant. Feels weird to cover a team that's against the cap,
right?
but here so we fun. Are
but yeah, like, do you almost want to make the move before, because that's the thing, if you wait to see if Cleven takes over the spot, and if he does, awesome, you get rid of Brännström, you got Pinto. But Pinto doesn't have a training camp. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Where it's the balance. Do you want to prioritize getting Pinto the training camp and getting him done before training camp ends? Or do you want to wait it out? Because I think if Cleven can come in and take Brännström's spot, and that's obviously the move you make, getting rid of Brännström.
Yep.
And you'll have enough money for Pinto. But it's just, yeah, I don't, like, it's obviously going to be up to Pierre Dorion and what he wants to do with his team. But I think it's the tightrope of, you can make an argument for both sides.
No, I completely agree. Now, if I were to give you a final question, Phil Kessel, is he going to play? Is the Iron Man streak still going? I know you're a big fan of him when he was in Toronto.
Oh, Phil Kessel is my guy. I so want him to play. I don't know where, but I think he'll play. And I think him coming out and saying, I'm cool with giving up the Iron Man streak, is really him just saying, I want to play hockey.
Well, next year. I think it's him saying, nobody's willing to give me a contract right now.
That's true. But I think it's really him coming out and saying, like, yeah, no one wants to give me a contract. Guys, I'll even, like, get rid of the Iron Man streak. Like, that's just how much I want to play hockey right now. I'm not trying to be on the bench lifting the cup with the in the press box. Yeah. So
I think that's totally fair.
I hope he gets a contract because it's fun. I love Phil Kessel. I mean, I don't know many people who don't at least have a little soft spot for Phil Kessel.
Yeah, the league's better when Phil Kessel's in it. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. So, I mean, I hope for his sake that he gets a spot in the NHL. I don't think it's going to be with a contender or anything.
Oh, I could see him. Get him back to Arizona. Let's go.
That's what I was about to say. I could see him going back to Arizona because who cares in Arizona? Like, he'll be your highest selling jersey other than, like, Keller or something. Like, Kessel will sell jerseys. Kessel will play in your lineup. And Arizona can afford to keep that Iron Man streak going.
Yeah.
They losing out on. So hopefully for his sake, we get Phil Kessel back in the league.
The whole league is better with Uncle Phil in the mix.
Exactly. Exactly. And so thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Dude, anytime. You let me know if you want to do this during the season, whenever you're up for it, man. Maybe before Battle of Ontario, we can plan and get some real chirps going.
Yes, definitely. Sounds good, man. And do you want to plug your show before you leave?
Sure, yeah. Everyone can find us on Sen Central on Twitter, Locked On Senators on Instagram, and you can find the show Locked On Senators 5 days a week or more wherever you get your podcasts.
Awesome. Thanks, man. And we'll be right back with another segment with me and Isaac.
Sponsor for today's episode is Podcasters by Spotify. Podcasters is the fastest and easiest way to make and publish a podcast. Podcasters is used by thousands of different podcasts around the world, including our very own. They will automatically distribute your podcast to all platforms, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. The best part of it all is that it's free. So go to podcasters.spotify.com to get started. And thank you again to them for sponsoring today's episode.
And welcome back to the show. I'm now going to be joined by my co-host, Isaac Donnelly. How's it going, Isaac?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Today is the first day of school, so we both had to go back to school. So, you know, a little return back to normal. Summer break, do you well?
Yeah, return back to school, return back to this. Had to dust off the microphone a little bit, so I'm not coughing up a storm here. But, summer was great. Didn't get a chance to really cover as much stuff as I would have liked to, but circumstances I was in didn't really allow that. So we're back, and I think I can say for the both of us, we promise to be more consistent this point forward. Same. Then in 2 months when we haven't done an episode, we can play this clip on top of that, and exactly, I'll look back on it and be like, oh.
Exactly, exactly. But if everything goes according to plan, we'll be a little bit more consistent, and we'll get you some content pumped out for the NFL season coming up, the hockey season coming up, basketball season coming up, a lot of sports coming up, including the baseball playoffs. So a lot of stuff to be covering here in the next few weeks. But I wanted to start off the show, or at least this segment, with some big news out of women's hockey. I think probably the biggest news of all time in women's hockey, the new PWHL league being announced. 6 original teams. All being located, 3 teams in Canada, 3 teams in the United States, the 3 in Canada being Montreal, Ottawa, and Toronto. and then the three in the United States of America being Minnesota, New York, and Boston. How excited are you for this league?
I think this might be one of the greatest things to happen to the sport in a long time. We've seen professional women's hockey leagues kind of collapse in the last, let's call it 5 to 10 years. But I think with the way this will be done, we'll be here to stay. The markets they've picked, I think it's safe to say that we both agree. Like in the States, Minnesota, New York, Boston, I think are terrific.
Yeah.
People a little iffy on the Minnesota one, but Minnesota loves their hockey. So, like, it's very understandable. And then, again, Boston and New York are two places where if it's done right, if it's marketed properly, it should be a good ship. Then in Canada, like, you don't really see anything on the west end of Canada, but Toronto, Montreal, then Ottawa, of all places.
Well, I know, right? I was a little shocked about the game. The nation's capital getting the nod for one of the six teams.
I'm not complaining.
Exactly.
I don't think you're complaining. I don't think I'm complaining. You know, gives us a chance to actually see it for ourselves. Maybe post some stuff on our stories.
Exactly.
Of us at games. So it'll be interesting to see, especially one thing for me is arenas. And this can, like, I don't know. It's tough to say because I don't know if you know how the previous iterations of these women's hockey leagues have run it and what kinds of rinks. But I think that's the big piece first. If each team, for say, can find a venue that, how do I put it this way? I'm trying to figure it out. If you can put it in a venue where it's not going to seem cavernous. Because, like, since this is a new league, it's going to be very hard to tell off the get-go how you're going to sell. How you're going to sell tickets, how you're going to sell merchandise. Never mind, all these teams don't even have a name. They're all under PWHL Ottawa, PWHL Toronto. So, for me, I think arenas is a big thing that I'm very interested to see. Team names, I'm very interested to see that as well, too. You know, when you get a new league like this, fresh names. And then there will be no question the quality of hockey will be excellent. Like, yeah. Let's just get that straight off the bat. Like, you, like, we're going to see some Olympians and some up-and-comers. The best in the world are going to be playing in this league. So it will be exciting. I encourage you to watch it because I know I will watch it. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be the best players in the world. It's not going to be split up because I think that was the major problem with women's professional hockey leagues was that they were split up into the two leagues. They had the PHF and then the PWHPA, I believe was the other league, which was more of...
It wasn't really a league. It was more of like a touring. Really a league.
Exactly. It was a tour, exactly. So it wasn't really a league. The PHF did pretty well. But it wasn't the best players in the world. That was the big problem with the PHF. They set up the league well. They had good team branding. I think the Toronto Six had excellent branding.
Montreal's branding was insane.
I know. They had some great branding for that entire league. Like, the league was set up well. They just didn't have the best players in the world. There was no Marie-Philippe Poulains. There was no Brandon Jenner. There was no Emily Clarks. There was no massive names in the women's hockey game. So I think now that this new league is going to be able to join and combine both leagues, and it's clearly being backed by a lot of great people. They're really,
including the NHL, right?
Exactly, including the NHL.
Yeah, which I think exactly.
Is a huge thing, but they're bringing in the best players, and they're all putting them in one league, which I think is awesome. I think it's the best thing you can do for the sport. You're gonna have six teams, and six teams spread amongst the best players in the world. It's gonna be some really good teams. There's not gonna be very many. I don't think there's gonna be any players in this league that are, you can say, well, she's clearly not great. Like, no, it's going to be the elite of the elite. It's going to be some of the best hockey you're going to be able to see anywhere in the world. And I'm just really looking forward to this PWHL. I mean, I think it has real potential to be an awesome step forward in not only women's hockey, but hockey in general. I think this is just the best thing for women's hockey.
Yeah, and like you're right. Like if you were to look at the PHF and like you saw any rosters, the casual hockey fan wouldn't know anyone really. And I'm not saying that's a knock on those girls, 'cause don't get me wrong, they're tremendous hockey players. Like I saw a little bit, like I've seen highlights from here time to time, and I'm like,
Good
okay.
hockey. It's really good
It's
hockey,
good
yeah.
hockey. And by comparing this to the PHF, if you are an everyday person in Canada, the States, or any hockey fan in general, and you were to look at the PHF and the rosters of the teams, I'm like, no offense to anybody, but you probably wouldn't recognize most of these names or any of them all. And that's not a knock on these girls because they are tremendous hockey players. It's great hockey. Like, it's great entertainment. If you're a hockey fan, no matter where you're from, you'll find entertainment out of the PHF. But now that you got these stars, these names who are known all over the world, like Marie-Philippe Poulin, Brienne Jenner, Sarah Nurse, then you kind of sit there and you're like, you know what? This is going to be spectacular if it's done the right way. And I think they're doing it the right way this time.
Yeah, I think it's set up the right way. And if this thing can succeed and people are going to be there to watch, I think this is just going to completely grow the game of women's hockey. And I'm really excited for that. I think it's awesome. You're going to get to see this level of competition not every 4 years. You don't have to wait for the Olympics now every year. You got a league that you can watch. So I think what they've done is awesome. The only knock I'd have on the PWHL right now is the kind of the free agency period. Like, I get it kind of takes time to set up free agents, but today was the first free agents that signed, and it is the fifth as of recording this, and three free agents have signed so far. And like, the free agency period was from the 1st to the 10th. Like, if you could have gotten some free agents on the 1st, I think that probably would have been ideal. But it's not small nitpick, I think, at the league. But this today, like, three being announced for Ottawa, I think more to come. Sounds like there's going to be a lot more moves in the next coming days, plus the draft on the 10th, I believe. So,
Yeah, draft on the 10th.
yeah, so it's exciting time for women's hockey.
Exciting time and news coming out a few couple days ago actually. We have the first venue in the league.
Yes, we do. In Ottawa.
And it is Ottawa will be playing at the arena at TD Place.
Which is, I think, is an
So
awesome stadium for
the
a race arena.
8,000 seat arena that the 67s usually put curtains up to make it like five. Or four, roughly in that range. I honestly, it's a money spot. Like we talked about how Lansdowne is like the model for any city to follow for having all your sports and entertainment down there. And especially with like that new arena being built down there too, I think will be terrific. They added that this new team will get their own room, as they should. And yeah. And general manager, what's his name again? And Hirschfield mentioned that this facility probably one of the best facilities in the league. And I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean,
Yeah, no,
not
it's gonna
talking
be
just from
amazing.
my Ottawa bias. Like I've seen the facilities and like all that. Like I grew up going to TD Place. Like I've been on the ice at TD Place. Like she's nice. And
Yeah,
like
no, it's a really nice arena, and I think it's perfect for the PWHL, because I mean, ultimately the goal one day is to be playing in arenas like the Canadian Tire Centre, Scotiabank Arena, or TD Gardens, but I think right for now it's perfect to have them in the down in Lansdowne where the 67s play. I think that's a greater spot for them. I think if Toronto can put them in like the Coca-Cola Coliseum where the
I
Toronto
think that's
Maple
what
Leafs
they're going to
play,
end up
I
doing
think
too.
that's a perfect spot for them. Like, I don't know if the massive arenas are the play right now, but I think if you move into smaller venues, you can really pack the place and make it a great atmosphere, great hockey atmosphere.
It's a good way to kind of test the waters a little bit. But
Exactly.
also, if you sell those arenas out, that barn is going to be bumping.
Yeah, no
Like
kidding.
if you look
Like,
at like just like atmospheres you see in the Yo and the Q, like the Slush Puppy Center might have one of the best atmospheres in Canada for hockey. Like, if you go down there during a playoff game, it will be unlike anything you have seen in your life. And part of that is because you are so close to the glass. It's like an arena that sits, I think, 5,000 or 4,000 is the like max capacity. People bought standing room tickets. In this place, like, you couldn't walk around the concourse without bumping into people. And you just package that with such a good on-ice product. It's a win-win. And if this league can create that, it's going to be something special.
Yeah. Like, I went to the PWHPA All-Star Game here in Ottawa last year, and it was awesome hockey. It was a great event put on by the league. But there was maybe 2,000 fans in the arena. Like, it, and it was at the Canadian Tire Center. It just felt bad, and it really kind of killed the event. It really kind of killed all the hype for it. Just, I mean, it was still great hockey, don't get me wrong. Like, it was still a great event. But it just kind of really killed the mood, that the atmosphere was very meh, you know what I mean?
So, and it's a shame.
Yeah, exactly. It's phenomenal hockey. So if you can pack this, the TD Center, I believe it's, yeah.
TD Place,
thank you. Then the atmosphere is such a big part of hockey. And if you can get such a great atmosphere for world-class hockey, then I think that's the best possible scenario.
Yeah, it's – yeah, TD Place, I think they did a great job picking that venue. I don't really think they had much options for that, but they picked a good one. And that set, now we're just looking at the other five to kind of pick and choose. Like, you're right, Toronto will probably end up at the Coca-Cola. Montreal will probably end up at the Verdun Auditorium, where the Alliance de Montréal plays, the CBL basketball team plays. They'll probably end up playing out of there. Then for the American teams, we have no clue.
Yeah, we'll see.
Sorry, we couldn't tell you.
We'll see with the American teams, but like, it's kind of funny. Almost Ottawa setting the tone, Ottawa picking the first venue, Ottawa signing the first three free agents. Shout out Ottawa setting the tone for the PWHL. Exactly. Shout out Ottawa. And shout out the PWHL. We'll be covering that all year, so stay tuned for that, and we'll let you know, keep you updated with everything going on in the league. But a great step forward in women's hockey, and not just women's hockey in general, but hockey in general. So
I'm going to be the first one to say this. Ottawa, you're planning two parades.
Yes. Oh, okay. I was about to say yes, sir. I'm like, because I'm fully going for the Ottawa PWHL team. I don't know about the Sens, but, you know. Good luck to the Ottawa PWHL team. And
sorry, you'll for sure get one parade there.
Emily Clark's going to be an absolute beast. I can't wait to see her play. So, yeah, we'll keep you guys updated throughout the season on everything happening in the PWHL. Awesome steps forward in women's hockey. And before we end the show, I did want to kind of touch on the big Thursday night football matchup, the first game of the season between the reigning and defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs and against my Detroit Lions. I'm very excited for this game. I wanted to kind of get your opinion because, I mean, I got the Lions bias. For anyone who doesn't know, I'm a big Detroit Lions fan. So I kind of got the bias there, and I think there might be a potential of an upset. But I did want to get an outsider's view of what do you think of this this Lions-Chiefs matchup?
Personally, I think it's going to be a great game. You know, you have an up-and-coming team like the Detroit Lions who are looking to take advantage of the Packers slipping, slipping and falling, as well as pretty much. Bears being the Bears. So, honestly, I think this is their chance to prove what they got. This game could honestly go either way because the Kansas City Chiefs are honestly the golden standard of the NFL right now. Like, in terms of regular season play, this team has been the most consistent team in all of football for the last 5 years. But with the Detroit Lions, it seems every year they're getting better and better and better, that this could be a year where they really shut some people up.
Yeah.
And yeah, I hope they do, because I'd rather them shutting people up than the Minnesota Vikings. That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it'll be a good game. And I think Detroit can win this game without actually winning this game. I think the Chiefs can come away with a win and it still be a successful game for the Detroit Lions. Because, again, they're the Super Bowl champions. Lions didn't make the playoffs last year. So even if you can put up a good game, I think what I'd hope for this game to be is for any Lions fans or Bills fans that remember last year's Thanksgiving game against the Bills. The Bills eventually came out on top with the win, but the Lions really gave them a run for their money and like really showed that they can compete. And I think that, even though it came out as a loss, was a real jumpstart moment for the Lions to finish the season off the way they did. And I think if the Lions can do that to start off the season, the only good things can come out of it. I think the Chiefs are going to be a little weaker with Chris Jones looking like he's not going to play. Him being a top 10 NFL player, ranked by the NFL, he's one of the best defensive players in the NFL, if not the best. And the Chiefs losing him might be a big blow. I think this Lions offense is going to be very versatile. I'm really excited to see how Jahmyr Gibbs, the rookie running back out of Alabama, does, who they drafted in the first round this year. I'm also looking to see the improved defense for this Lions team. They got a bigger line. They got Jack Campbell out of Iowa, who they drafted in the first round as well. So he was a lot of people thought he might have been a reach, but if it's going to improve this this defensive line here for the Detroit Lions, which is, let's be honest here, been a weakness for this team over the last few years, yeah. I think it could be a good thing. And I'm also, the two guys I'm really excited to see would be one, C.J. Gardner-Johnson from Philadelphia last year. He led the league in interceptions, and the Lions got him. Lions' biggest problem last year was their passing defense. They gave up the most passing touchdowns out of any team in the NFL last year. So I think if they can improve that, and I think they have improved that, getting the guy who had the most interceptions is always a good thing. So,
it doesn't hurt.
Does not hurt. So I think that'll be a good improvement for the Lions. And the other guy I think who's going to surprise a lot of people and show up in a real big time way is Sam Laporta, the tight end out of Iowa, who they drafted in the second round, I believe. Dan Campbell, the head coach of the Detroit Lions, used to be a tight end. And he kind of shows that in his offense. He's a very tight end friendly guy. Last year, after TJ Hawkinson was traded, three different tight ends with this Lions team scored a touchdown. And like, Brock Wright was one of them. Like, some people know Brock Wright. And there was two other guys that, like, I'm a hardcore Lions fan. Like, I didn't even know one of the guys. And they were getting touchdowns. So I think Sam Laporta, if he can come over and be the tight end for this Lions, I think he's going to have a real successful chance at being a great tight end in this league, especially with Dan Campbell's like willingness to use the tight end. Jared Goff doesn't have a cannon. We know this, but he's going to be more friendly to his tight ends. He's going to jump off the short passes. He's going to be able to really feed Sam Laporta, and we'll see how he does this year. So in conclusion, Chiefs probably going to win, let's be honest here. But I think if the Lions can at least make it close, make it not a blowout, hopefully, then I think it can be a successful game for this team.
Absolutely right. And obviously Thursday kicking off the start of the NFL season. Also the start of everyone being glued to their fantasy lineup. So I wish everybody luck who is in a fantasy league. I'm in too. So let's hope I can at least find success in one.
Good luck to everyone.
Good luck to everyone. And I would love to hear your fantasy drama. So hit us up at Twitter and all that fun stuff. Sorry.
Hit us up on our social medias.
X now.
X. Yes, my bad.
You got to keep up on X.
Hit us up on our social medias. And I think that's a pretty perfect segue to end the show here. So you can hit us up on all of our social medias on X at @blue_line_report or on Instagram. Is also @blue_line_report, I believe. Or just search up Blue Line Report. You'll see us. And go find us on every podcast platform, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or even Spotify. We will be there. Blue Line Report, we will be there. Check us out next week. Thank you again to Ross Levitin for coming on the show. Great to have him back. And hopefully we'll be able to get him back. But yeah, very exciting times. And we'll be back next week. Thank you guys.